Hey, you're listening to the 5-Minute Talk Show with Phil Iazetta. We're bringing you today's best comedy and entertainment personalities. Now your host, Phil Iazetta.
Joining us on the 5-Minute Talk Show hotline is a gentleman, honestly, I feel like I know. I've been a fan of his for years, followed his career, because technically we're both Florida boys. I don't want to sell people, you know, a false story, Wayne, but technically you're a Georgia guy, but we've adopted you in the state of Florida. Wayne Brady joining us on the hotline. Welcome.
Well, there's no technically to it. I mean, I was born in Georgia, but I never lived there. So from the time I was 3 months old, I was raised in Orlando. And depending on how old you are, if I'm older than you, then I actually have more claim to Florida than you do. So I'm a Florida boy, too. I was raised in Orlando from the time I was 3 months old. So, I mean, of course, there was nowhere else to claim me because I'm from Orlando, raised in Tangelo Park, went to West Orange High School, went to Dr. Phillips High School. Yeah.
So when you went back to Orlando, I think you recently went back there within the last couple of years and you played the Phillips Center.
I'm doing that shortly.
I'm
doing that next month. Yeah, I'm doing that next month.
Okay, so what are the emotions then with this? How many people tried to hit you up for free tickets, first of all? Because we know people come out of the woodwork when they hear you're in. What is it like to go back?
Well, I don't think it's like, because I've been gone from Orlando since 93. So it's not like it's a homecoming in the sense of I've never been back. So I've done shows there and I've gone back to visit my improv alma mater, SAC Theater, which I helped found the SAC Theater Comedy Lab and played with those guys and done a couple shows at a couple of venues around there. But I think it's one of those things that no matter when I go back, it's always a good feeling. It's a good feeling to know that you have accomplished something. And I think that all of us kind of have that thing of where if you started something in high school, you want to be remembered as the person that actually followed through on it. You know, we all have those fantasies of going to the reunions and not being embarrassed. So I think that when it comes to that kind of thing, I've checked off a little box or two, and it feels good to go home. It feels great to go, hey folks, and have some of my friends from high school. We're going to be doing our 30th reunion next month, to have a lot of those guys get to the show, and guys that I came up with at SAC, people that I worked with at Universal Studios and at Disney. It's a nice feeling. It's always good to be able to give home a high five, then get back on the plane.
Well, first of all, you're one of the most humble people I've ever spoken to, because for you to say you've checked off a couple boxes, Wayne, come on, you have done everything there is to do in this business and done it well and done it with class. And I mean, that's why I'm so proud to say, hey, there's one person from Florida with all the stories we read coming out of that place. It's great to see a couple of us are trying to do better and try to do well by the state. Now, you talk
Amen.
About, right?
Hashtag Florida man.
Oh, man, because all the stories that come out of there, I mean, some of them are great, some of them are fun, but at the same time, it's like, come on, it's not all bad. It's a great state. So that said, when you're checking off those bucket list things, and, you know, as I said, you've done it all. When you had the chance to work with Jerry Lewis, an icon like that, and, you know, we hear a lot of stories of how tough he is to work with, but I have a feeling he was very nice to you, and I have a feeling that might have been one of the biggest check marks of all those boxes.
Oh, yeah. You know, getting to work, God, I guess it was like maybe 20 years ago that I got to work with Mr. Lewis when he asked me to. It was one of the first big things, I think, that I was approached to do after Whose Line Went on the Air, was to take over the telethon for a season or two and to fill in for him hosting wise. And my manager at the time, Bernie Brillstein, God bless his soul, who is another Hollywood legend, if you study up on showbiz stuff, he is the one that introduced me to Mr. Lewis. And that's one of those things of where you go, I used to sit at home watching the old movies of Dean and Lewis, and watching the first Nutty Professor, and watching videos of the nightclub act on PBS, and this guy who was kind of responsible for a branch of comedy to be able to have cats like that say, hey, I like you and I appreciate you. You continue the legacy. That's such a humongous pat on the back. And I've gotten a few of those to get to meet and work with him, to meet Carol Burnett, to have her give me love. Tim Conway was a guest on my old variety show back in the day. Getting a chance to be on stage with him as he did Dorf, checked off all this old school bucket list comedy legend, because I truly respect the people that have come before me. And so to be able to work with a lot of those guys comedically and a lot of older singers and a lot of older actors to be in their presence, that's a big pat on the back.
Well, Wayne, it's obvious that you pay reverence to these guys and pay homage to these guys, because first of all, the way that you work at the craft, you're not one of those guys who just goes out and just mishmashes something together. You really are a true triple threat. I mean, if we were starting a fantasy team of entertainers, I mean, you'd be in the first round. I mean, because you can do it
all. Oh, thanks, man.
But it's true. I love the fact, though, and it's, I think it's being lost today somewhere in comedy because people want to go politics or the lowest common denominator. The very fact that you bring back impressions of guys like Louis Armstrong, you know, Stevie Wonder, when you do guys like, you know, Sammy Davis Jr., those are people that this generation not only forgot, but I don't think they ever really knew who these guys were, because we don't watch television the same way as we do today.
Yeah, we definitely don't consume media, which, you know, not to sound like a cranky old man shaking your fist.
We're getting there.
But that's just the way that media is now. And I get it. But I do think that if you forget where everything started, both musically and comedically, but even politically, if you forget the people that have come before and those lessons, then you can't move forward. You can't build on it. And I think the thing is, I was such a student as a kid because my mom didn't let me really go outside a lot. So I had my imagination and I watched a lot of PBS. And so that's where I became acquainted with a lot of the old legends of comedy who were already older legends by the time that I was a kid watching them. I mean, I go old school with it, like watching Sammy Davis Jr., like you said, who was probably one of the most amazing triple threats, but watching Ernie Kovacs and Sid Caesar, and to then more modern times at that point, Monty Python, you know, the Goodies, a lot of Dave Allen, to Robin Williams, to Jonathan Winters, to becoming a student of the improvisational and sketch form at an early age, I knew that you always have to have those guys in the back of your mind. So I hate when some young kid goes, oh no, that's before my time. Like, no, if you want to be good at something, like, we don't have to have been born during World War II to have studied it in school. Exactly. Study it. Just know your history. And then when you're trying to make someone laugh, then you can reach back and pay homage, instead of thinking that you just invented something new when that same joke was probably made about 40 years ago and probably made better.
Exactly. I mean, when you look at comics, like, I mean, Robin Harris to me is one person who sticks out in my mind that I'd always tell young comics, look, if you're a fan of Bernie Mac, if you like what he did, listen to Robin Harris, you know, and listen to Mom's before that, because Mom's, her act holds up today. It's amazing. But speaking of the past, the voice you're listening to, that of Wayne Brady, check him out at waynebradyworld.com, at Wayne Brady on Twitter. He is going to be part of a great festival, caboodelmar.com. We'll talk about that in a minute. But talk about the history and let's make a deal. And you and Drew Carey, to me, I mean, you guys are just... I don't angels to the comedy world, because what he's been able to do with Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal, you're bringing back that old school flavor to TV, and there's a whole new generation of kids that love those shows now.
They absolutely dig it, and the cool thing about taking over Let's Make a Deal is I remember when Monty, God bless him, sat me down at his house. He was pitching me the idea of me doing Let's Make a Deal, because when they offered it to me at first, I really wasn't interested. I passed on it twice, because when I thought of a game show, I thought of probably the, how do I put it, the worst case version of a game show, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like I feel like there are certain stereotypes and shorthands that we use for comedy and just in life. So if someone grabs a microphone and they go, "You want a brand new car," that is what someone thinks of when they go, "That's an old game show, that's corny." It's just like when someone makes fun of a news reporter and they put on their news voice.
Right.
There are plenty of cool news reporters, but if you want to get a laugh, you immediately go for, "Hi, my name is Texas Rains, and I'm a," and like, okay. So immediately when they said game show, I thought, okay, that's not going to happen. But in talking to Monty and sitting down with, at the time, Mike Richards, the EP, and the guys from Fremantle, what we came up with was they said, "We don't want you to do Monty's game show. We don't want you to be the guy with the microphone that says, here's a brand new car. We need whatever it is that you do combined with a game show and make it your own." And I said, "Well, then in order to do my job right, I need to make this like a daytime improv mini sketch show with games. And in order to do that, I need my partner, Jonathan Mangum. I need my buddy, Cat Gray, because I need to make the environment a place where anything can happen at any time." And I think that's become the hallmark of Let's Make a Deal. Besides the fact that we make people feel great and we make them laugh, at any time, anything can happen. Someone could start singing a song. I can bust out in a game. We can get someone from the audience and run outside the studio. That's evolved. And I'm so proud to be a part of something like that, while still paying the necessary due to Monty's beautifully crafted game. Because there's a reason that it's been around for 50 years in one incarnation or the next, because it's a good game.
Well, when you love something, I mean, it comes through. And let me tell you, the way that you guys have that chemistry on stage, it's just fun. I mean, everyone wants to be on that show. Everyone wants to watch that show. I couldn't see anyone else host that show except for you, because the old version of the show, it was great. It was a classic. But this new spin, Wayne, I mean, it really, really makes everything move, makes everyone happy. And that's how I can't understand. When I heard that you were battling depression for a brief time, I couldn't even imagine that. And that's why I was so happy you spoke about it. Because when I see Wayne Brady, I think Disney, I think Mickey Mouse, I think good times. I didn't think it was possible for you not to be happy all the time.
Well, I think that is the last thing that I ever want another person thinking about me, is looking at me and thinking Disney and Mickey Mouse, because I'm a grown-ass man.
I know.
So I really, really don't want that. You know, I understand that. But even what you said is also part of what I feel is a problem of human nature.
Okay.
Everyone is human. Everyone, no matter if you are the highest paid entertainer in the world to a politician, to a dock worker, to the guy working at McDonald's, everyone operates on emotion. So to have the onus put on your back that you could never be depressed or you can't be sad, kind of in the comedy world, and there are a lot of documentaries now, and one that I'm a part of, it's almost like to a degree, the analogy that I can draw is to pornography, in the sense of pornography is not real. We all know that. And you and anyone that likes that, you do with that what you will. But it's not real. It is absolutely not reality. It is not. Comedy, when you're watching it on TV, that person is doing that thing in that framework. It's not real. It's designed to make you feel good. But the person doing it is a human. So it only goes to figure that they still have the same problems and foibles and chemical imbalances and the crappy days that you have. The only thing is they have chosen, or maybe the gift chose them, to be able to take some of that internalized pain and be able to make you laugh about it.
Well, I
think it's, so it's that mindset, even when Robin Williams passed away. So many people, I cannot believe that he would kill himself because he had everything. He makes everybody laugh. That has nothing to do with it.
No, but that one though, to me, I mean, and I've had my share of friends that I've lost to this in this business. I mean, you talk about guys like Greg Giraldo, Mitch Hedberg. I mean, whether it's a suicide, accidental, intentional, Robin to me was different because at a very early age, I was blessed to work with him on a movie set. And I actually,
That's great.
Well, Wayne, I actually was lucky enough to play his son. And in a movie called Seize the Day. I don't know if you ever watched it. It was Saul Bellow's book before he did Good Will Hunting. If you Google it, you'll see it. It was his first dramatic role that I can remember. And meeting him on set, he and speaking to other comics about Robin after he passed, it was the same. Every person had the same thing to say. When you were around Robin, he sucked the energy, the air, everything out of the room, and he was it. I mean, there was no one else around. He was the focal point. Whatever room he was in, regardless of the accomplishments of the people, Robin had a way of disarming people and making everyone happy. So when he killed himself, the Wayne, it was something like, to me, Santa Claus died. You know, it was like, where I found all my joy, it was gone. And I didn't know what to think for a long time after that. So when I heard you battled depression as well, you know, it makes people think, my God, if these guys are going through it, what do I have to do in my life to make sure people that I affect every day aren't having the same thoughts? What can I do to be a better person to everyone I come into contact with?
Well, I think that's part of the great good news that comes out of the horrible news of someone like Robin passing is it raised the awareness and lifted to a degree the cloud of stigma. And then people like myself started coming out. And now you've got different musicians and different athletes and people in the community talking about it, which just goes to show you that it's obviously not a small problem that affects a tiny group of people. It's a bigger issue that affects a lot of people, but a lot of people don't want to talk about it because no one wants to be labeled as crazy. No one wants to be difficult. No one wants to be sick. No one wants to be damaged. But if the message is, instead of you saying, how can I be a better person, it's not about you being a better person, because I'm sure that you're a good person. In fact, if anything, I think you can tweak that message to say, how can I be of more service to the people in my life that may be going through something? And even being of service is just listening. If someone says, hey, man, I'm going through it, and you just listening, that sometimes is all that someone needs. It's not going to fix or cure them, because you know the reality is, especially when it comes to chemical depression, it is a chemical imbalance. It's an actual disease. It's in you. You can develop the tools to fix it, to balance and maintain life. But so many people don't want to develop the tools because we're so ashamed that we don't go to the proper care. So that's why I like the fact that people think that they, because people like me because I've made them laugh. Now, sometimes I can step out of that role and go, hey, look, this is what's going on in real life, which I think is one of the coolest things that I've been able to do in my career.
Let me tell you, you keep impressing all of us, and that's why I'm saying you are so loved, Dwayne Brady. Anytime you have a negative thought, just think of all the people that you've made a positive change in their lives. I mean, you really are a service to the community. Caboo, Del Mar,
thanks,
the reason. Well, you're welcome. That's why we have you here, and that's why we're talking about this festival, because to me, live music and comedy, if you're having a bad day, a bad week, you go to something like Caboo Del Mar, and it's just going to change your whole attitude. Go to CabooDelMar.com. Wayne Brady will be taking the stage Sunday night, 6:35 p.m. You're closing out the festival, and we're going to end it on a great note. Bob Saget right before you. How excited are you to be part of this festival? I mean, you talk about Black Eyed Peas, Duran Duran, Sheryl Crow, Bob Saget.
I know.
Comics. Who are you excited to see?
Well, I'm excited to see the Black Eyed Peas. You know, like you said, this is the perfect festival for someone like me, because music and comedy, if I didn't have both of those at my disposal, then we wouldn't be talking right now, because that's what my whole thing is based on. Like that's what I think is the best deliverer of comedy to me is music. And so to have a festival where I get to come and make stuff up and make songs up on the fly and make folks happy, and then be in the same company of people that I really respect. You know, Bob Saget is an OG. He has been in the game for so many years and has such a great duality, and I love watching him and then to check out some of the music acts. So this is the first time in a few years that I've been part of a really fun big festival like this. So I can't wait. And the people that come to see me close out my portion of it, you know, I think it's everything that if you like me or if you like anything that I've done, it's there. We even start off the whole thing with a freestyle rap that I get words from the audience. Give me the hardest words that you can, words that are germane to your job or just to you. And then we take those words, and all of a sudden the band kicks in and we start off with a big, big hip hop freestyle. Then I go into audience participation scenes where I bring people up on stage and we do props, we do sound effects, some of the Who's Line, you know, greatest hits that people enjoy. Then we do an improvised Q&A session where the audience writes down any question that they want to, and I promise that I'll answer it with 100% honesty, but only if the person that wrote the question stands up and has a conversation with me about the answer, which of course makes the audience titter nervously, because when you think you're anonymous, the crap you write down and the crap you say in real life sometimes leads to an awkward moment or two. And I do that because nothing is more improvisational than a conversation. So my answer could lead to just an answer. It could lead to a scene. It could lead to a song. So that's probably one of my favorite moments. And then we close out doing an improvisational music set where the audience writes down questions and songs and song titles that don't exist. I take their song titles, and my music director, Cat Gray, picks a style of music or musical impression and plays it. And I sing the songs, and we make them up right on the spot using the audience's suggestion, so that they can never say, "Oh, that was an improv, and you wrote it." It came from them in the moment. So it's an improvised rock concert, and you're gonna love it.
I'm telling you, I love everything you do, because Wayne, the speed at which your mind works is unparalleled. I mean, you are so fast. And Whose Line Is It Anyway was one of my favorite shows of all time, when it was you and Drew and the old crew. To me, that was one of the smartest, funniest shows on television. I would love to see it come back like an all-star version once again.
Well, it's been on the air for 5 seasons.
I understand.
We're actually on the air on the CW, and it's great. In fact, I'm having more fun this time around than the original time.
Really?
Really.
That original cast, to me, I don't know. Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm getting to be a grumpy old man. But anyway,
but
when
it's
still
the original cast.
It is
still Ryan. It's Colin. It's myself. Greg Proops has popped on. Brad Sherwood pops on. Jeff Davis has popped on. The only change is Aisha Tyler as the host, and she is a genius. She is a certified butt-kicking genius.
Well, you mentioned my favorite, though, Wayne, not to interrupt you. Greg Proops, to me, is one of the smartest men in the world. I mean,
absolutely.
Hence his podcast. I love the guy. That's why that's what I was honestly alluding to. Greg Proops to me.
Oh yeah, Greg is on the show.
Okay, I got to start watching then. Where have I been?
It's on the CW. And if you need to go and see all the back episodes, go to iTunes or go to Netflix.
I'm going to do that right now. Well, right after I give people this. WayneBradyWorld.com, at Wayne Brady on Twitter. As I said, Cabo Del Mar. Go to CaboDelMar.com, 6:35 p.m. He's going to be there for a full hour, people. So if you're a fan of Wayne Brady, you're going to love this. Last thing before we let you go, Chappelle's Show. One of the best sketches I've seen on the show. Do people still come up to you and say, is Wayne Brady going to have to smack a bitch?
Choke. And yeah, some people do. And it was cool because it's in the top, it's in the Museum of TV History, top 10 sketches of all time. Yeah, it's always great to be associated with something super cool. And Dave is, you know, and Dave is one of those guys who is a modern day comedy touchstone. So that's another one of those checklists, you know? Getting a chance to do some great stuff like that, and when the people come out to the festival, they'll see that it's definitely without going overboard and without going too crazy, it's definitely an adult show, and I think that they'll laugh the butts off. You know, it's cool.
Well, let me tell you, I love that you showed that edge because everybody knew it was there. Wayne Brady, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having me, brother. Thank you.
You've been listening to the 5-Minute Talk Show. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and keep listening at 5MinuteTalkShow.com.